too, as far as I'm concerned. I have a long history at LSU. My mother finished at LSU in 1924. Five of my seven children have 6 degrees from LSU. I finished at LSU in 1958. I went to LSU in 1953, and I would say the person that, if I had not met this person at LSU, I would still be at LSU, and that's Dr. Ray Odemar, who was teaching math at LSU. And again, Dr. Odemar taught me at least 2 years of math in the engineering school at LSU, and later went on to, of course, to be the president of ULL and USL. Interesting, of course, Dr. Odemar is from Terrebonne Parish. Dr. Odemar is from Boudreaux Canal, which is, again, 15 or 20 miles south of here. And his wife is from Shreba in Terrebonne Parish, and she grew up about 2 houses away from where my wife grew up. So we have a close, frankly, relationship with the Odemars and with you. My wife is a graduate of SLI, and my wife's mother was a graduate of SLI, and a number of her aunts were graduates of SLI. So we...
It's a very small world in South Louisiana.
We have a very fond, spot in our hearts, for frankly, both LSU and SLI, USL, ULL.
Well, can we start by just telling us a little bit about your own background, where you were born, where you grew up?
Yeah, again, I'm William Clipper Smith, and I was actually born in New Orleans on April 21st, 1935. But from the time I was a week old, I lived in Houma, Louisiana, Terrebonne Parish, except for from 1953 to about 1958, when I lived in Terrebonne, but I also lived at LSU, in the stadium and in the dormitories at LSU. Received a bachelor's degree in civil engineering from LSU in 1958. Grew up in the engineering business of my father, who was T. Baker Smith, who was a Tulane graduate in civil engineering in 1913, born and raised in Terrebonne Parish. Went to a number of high schools around the South, but ultimately ended up at Tulane with a degree in civil engineering in 1913. He came back to Houma after his graduation and began to practice civil engineering and land surveying in Terrebonne Parish in 1913. And again, talking about the time and ages, I would assume that there was about, at the most, 5,000 people living in Terrebonne Parish at that time. And he did whatever it took to make a living as a consulting civil engineer and land surveyor in those early days. Among other things, we have some pictures on the wall of plans that he developed for building steamboats as an engineer. He, of course, developed an expertise in the reconstruction of the U.S. government surveys on land between the Mississippi River and the Chappalaya River for major landowners such as Louisiana Land, Latair Land Company, Continental Land and Fur, and other major companies in the area, landowning companies, because much of these properties were surveyed by the U.S. government surveyors between the 1830s and the 1850s. And much of the land had transferred in title without much other benefits of surveys. So my father, working primarily for major landowners and ultimately for oil and gas companies and ultimately for other landowners, developed an expertise in the reconstruction of these U.S. government surveys, which are probably different in South Louisiana than anywhere in America. Mm-hmm. Because believe it or not, in the Louisiana Purchase, when they talk about all the acreage that was purchased by the United States from France, much of the usable surface areas of coastal Louisiana were already owned by people because of the French and Spanish grants that were given. And most of the ridges or highland along the bayous and rivers were already owned by people. And the only part that the United States acquired was the undeveloped lands between the ridges and the bayous. And then the U.S. government came in and surveyed and had to recognize, the U.S. government surveyors had to recognize the previous French and Spanish grants, mm-hmm. and then project a rectangular surveying system out into the marshes and into the swamp, into what they considered the unvaluable areas. And there were great hiatuses. The surveyors were paid by the mile. Can you imagine in the 1830s, 1850s, they were on horse and buggies and pirogues and what have you. But my father became an expert in reviewing the field notes and the maps of these U.S. government surveyors. He even acquired the instruments that they used so that he could follow in their footsteps. They were, in his time, they had developed a transit. But in the U.S. government surveyors, they didn't have transits. They had compasses and chains. So he, and we have in our collection around here, the compasses and the chains that he used in attempt to reconstruct the U.S. government surveys. Those are examples of witness trees that came out of the woods around Terrebonne Parish, of witness trees from U.S. government surveys that my father reconstructed.
Well, with your permission, I'd love to photograph that, because we have seen massive amounts of information about the witness trees, mm-hmm. you know, recorded by the surveyors going back to 1811 or so, I guess.
And what they would do, you see, if you follow the notes, which are very difficult to do, but if you follow the field notes, they would set a government corner, a section corner, a township corner, a range corner, and they were using cypress stakes. They weren't using anything more permanent. Hell, concrete had not been invented, much less steel or cast iron. They were using primarily cypress stakes. And when they would set the corner, then they would reference the corner. Normally, they would have four or five trees that were so many degrees, so many feet from the corner. And they would go to the tree, and they would X in the tree with a stencil that this is a witness tree. Okay. My father would come along in the 1920s primarily, 30s, and think he had gotten to the corner, but there was no corner because it had rotted away or been obliterated. So he would look around and he'd see a tree over there, and then he'd see another tree over there, and he's reading the notes, and it kind of fit that south 6 degrees, 14 minutes, so many chains or so many links. There was a cypress tree, an 8-inch cypress tree. The field note would say that. And we marked it as a witness tree. My father would go with so many lengths and see the tree, but the tree had grown. It was, say, witnessed in 1850, and he was there in 1925. Well, he would cut into the tree, and where the stencils were in the tree would peel back to that point. See the axe marks when they cut into the tree, and what you're looking at is upside down, because the stencils had put in the tree, and now you're peeling off the tree to see this. Now, what became very important is that the U.S. government notes are public information, okay? But the notes that retraced the U.S. government and decided that that was a witness tree and reestablished that corner is not public information. That's T. Baker Smith's information. And, of course, that's where he became an expert. Nobody really cared about that until about 1930, when they discovered oil in South Louisiana, particularly in Terrebonne Parish. And then everybody decided, well, maybe we ought to know how many acres they are from the Leret field in Terrebonne Parish over to the Laperouse field in Little Cayo, okay? Because the government surveys might have said they were 3 miles, and guess what? They ain't 3 miles. It might be 2.5 miles. So all of a sudden, everybody got very concerned about how many acres and how many ownership of who owns what. So again, he became an expert. He became an expert witness in court cases. I ended up, again, I was his youngest child. He was 45 years old when I was born in 1935. My father was truly an engineer. He believed in the profession. I think that he studied engineering because he loved the outdoors. He loved to hunt. He loved to fish. He grew up, again, in Terrebonne Parish. And I think his mother insisted that he study some profession. And I think he chose civil engineering because it gave him an ability to be in the outdoors. And so although he was an engineer and he design bridges and things like that, utility systems. He was also truly a surveyor. But he was also truly a collector of things. And we have, and the lady will bring it in a minute, we have the first field notes that he did in 1913. We even have information that he assembled even before 1913. And that he, again, we have in this office over 5 million pieces of paper, maps, field notes, calculation files, that frankly we have now microfilmed, and also we are now scanning to put into our computer system. I consider that to be very valuable information. Again, I was his youngest child. My older brother was interested in something else, architecture or something else. And I have an older sister whose husband was working in the oil industry, and nobody was interested, frankly, in the profession. And my father was adamant about the fact that I was interested in the profession, and therefore, if I was interested in the profession, he felt that this business belonged to me. And he told my brothers and sisters and my mother that. And in his will, he told him that the day that I graduated from LSU in 1958, the firm became T. Baker Smith and Son. Up to that time, it had been T. Baker Smith. After he died in 1962, the firm became T. Baker Smith and Son, Inc., because of taxes and other matters. And I was the sole proprietor, the sole owner since my father's death. And again, in his will, there's a special bequest to me for that purpose. Now I have my oldest son is Kenneth Smith, who is a graduate of Louisiana Tech in civil engineering, again, who grew up in the firm. Again, I was working in a survey crew when I was 12 or 13 years old, and he was too. And now he runs the firm, which consists of about 250 associates with offices in Houma, Thibodaux, Lafayette, Baton Rouge, and Houston. And we've expanded, of course, on my father's practice, both in the surveying field and in the engineering field, and now in the environmental science field. Somebody was just inquiring this morning before you got here about 404 permitting, wetland permits. And we get probably 200 to 300 permits a year for clients in the wetland areas of primarily coastal Louisiana, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi. I would think that we probably have become an expert at that, but I'm not sure anybody's an expert at that. I consider the whole process arbitrary and capricious. But we try to provide services to our clients in those fields. We even have in this organization now a group of OSHTA experts. Again, most of our work has been an evolution. Again, we basically started out as a surveying and engineering company. We probably now have 35 boats and about 200 vehicles. We are an equipment rental company, although it's all in one conglomerate. We are an engineering design company. We are a surveying company. We are an environmental service company. That includes, we have a group of so-called OSHTA experts that evaluate OSHTA problems for clients. And again, we've evolved in all of these things because this is what the client needs us to do. The volume of business we do in 30 days is more volume than my father did in his whole lifetime. But most of the work that we do in 30 days evolves back to some of the things that actually he did. Again, in 1958, when I finished school, he had one employee. And the only reason he had the business open was because I was interested in the business. He was 65 years old or 68 years old, and the only reason he kept the place open was because of me. He had an independent income out of the engineering business. And that's much is like similar, again, similar to me. What I've done evolved in a small community, an expanding community. When I got out of LSU in 58, we probably had 50,000 people in Terrebonne Parish. We always had an urban area around Houma. And Houma always owned its own utility system, which is kind of unusual. Its own electrical generation and distribution system, similar to Lafayette, right, but much smaller. And didn't have the assets, of course, of the Hymans and or the university in Lafayette. Interesting, the Hymans were from Houma. The Hyman brothers, the one that went to Lafayette and started the oil center, was born and raised in Houma. His mother ran a store called the Houma Bargain Store in Houma. And his brother, I think Morris is the one that went to Lafayette, his brother went to New Orleans and married the daughter of Cress and ended up by running the Cress stores in New Orleans. And they were born and raised in Houma and Terrebonne Parish. As a matter of fact, you mentioned earlier the boat races in Lake Barret that my father participated in when he was in college, I assume, and right out of college, maybe. They were promoted, he told me, they were promoted by the Hyman brothers, who had were young people growing up in Terrebonne Parish. So it's, well, again, my family, as near as I can tell, my mother was, of all things, a Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, and having a Wright and a Smith in Terrebonne Parish, both born and raised in Terrebonne Parish, was extremely unusual. The Wright family, as near as I can tell, came to Terrebonne in about 1830, primarily agriculture people, and evolved into livestock and livery stable businesses.
Where were they from originally?
I think the Wrights were actually, I think the Wrights came here from Virginia, okay, and I think they were probably from somewhere in England. And the reason I think that I had a great grandfather that went to Northern Virginia during the Civil War and fought in the Army of Northern Virginia with Robert E. Lee. And I think the Virginian cousins communicated with the cousins in Louisiana to come and fight for the Confederacy. Because there was very little activity, by the way, in the 3rd Congressional District during the Civil War. Although there was some, and I've been reading a little bit about that in the local paper. As a matter of fact, there's a guy working for the Houma Courier by the name of Bill Elsey that y'all ought to know if you don't know him already. Because I have some of the articles that he has recreated in the Houma Courier about some of the Civil War matters in Terrebonne. But generally the 3rd Congressional, fact of the matter, Tozay always told me, Congressman Tozay, that the 3rd Congressional District never seceded from the Union. And so in the Emancipation Proclamation, it only affected the counties and districts in the United States that had seceded from the Union. So Tozay always contended that the Emancipation Proclamation never affected the 3rd Congressional District. I'm not sure I knew that or agree with that, but anyhow, getting back to the Smiths, again, my father's mother was a DuPont. My father's father, as near as we can tell, came to South Louisiana right after the Civil War, and he ran sawmills, and they were Cypress people, and this is where my son ended up with my grandfather's house, which is a magnificent home right in the middle of Houma that's built out of virgin cypress. But anyhow, that was the Smith. Smith married a lady by the name of Clara DuPont. DuPont's family were from, DuPont's mother and father were from Bordeaux, France, and they were merchants. They came to Terrebonne, I think, probably just before the Civil War, and they had a store, and it later became A&JC DuPont store, A&JC DuPont, with Clara DuPont's brothers. And supposedly that store was at the corner of Barrow Street and Main Street. It's still there. Across the bayou from that was the Smith home. And supposedly the two DuPont brothers said, you can't live on this side of the bayou, you gotta go live on the other side. And that's where my grandfather bought the property on Park Avenue, right opposite Barrow Street, and built the first Barrow Street Bridge. But anyhow, that was C.P. Smith, and that was T. Baker's son, T. Baker's father, as a matter of fact, and I'm T. Baker's, and I was named William Clifford Smith. William was my grandfather Wright's name, a guy named Billy Wright, Jr., and my grandfather Smith was named Clifford P. Smith, Clifford Percival Smith, so they would name me William Clifford. And it ended up my call name became Clifford because William Smith is so counterfeit, you know. So I went to LSU, and at LSU they said middle name, if
first name, middle initial, and I was at LSU for about 3 years. My daddy went up there to find me one day, called the director and wanted to talk to Clifford Smith. They said, ain't nobody here by that name. So I've been sending that boy up here for 3 years.
Clifford, so anyhow. Is it fair to say, and continue please, but is it fair to say that your father was the first wetland surveyor in South Louisiana?
No. In my father's day, there were surveyors before my father. As a matter of fact, interesting that you asked that. There was a guy named V. Silikowski, who we have some records of and maps of, that were in Terrebonne Parish doing survey work. V. Silikowski was from, as near as I can tell, was from St. Helena Parish. And he came down here working for the Barra family. And the Barra family, who were very prominent in the St. Francisville area, ended up owning some land in this area. And I think Silikowski came down here to survey some of their properties. And that was right after the Civil War. Silikowski happened to be the commander of the Confederate troops at Port Hudson. Okay, during the Civil War. And actually, I think he was in Terrebonne doing some survey work before the Civil War and after the Civil War. And I was reading The Advocate one day, and they had some history about Port Hudson, and they had this guy, Silikowski. So I began to read about that, and we have maps and field notes in this office from a guy named Silikowski, and it's the same guy, Victor, I think it was Victor Silikowski. Mm-hmm. And he, again, was a surveyor that came into Terrebonne. Now, you talk about wetlands. I mean, of course, you couldn't hardly be in Terrebonne not being in the wet, even in those days. Mm-hmm. But he was primarily surveying highland, land of agriculture use, you found him. Then there was a guy by the name of Bocage in the area, and we have some field notes from Bocage before my father. But before my father, really as a professional, was Mr. Lovell from Lafourche. Mr. Lovell was a surveyor in Lafourche Parish, in Thibodaux. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Lovell had developed, as my father later developed, with the help of Mr. Lovell and other people, the process of following, when you do property surveys along the bayou, not only have you know about the government surveys, not only do you have to know about the grant surveys, and there were grant surveys even before the U.S. government surveys, but you got to know something about the titles. So my father would track the titles through the conveyance records, and Mr. Lovell did the same thing, and developed an abstract map of the area, trying to fit the titles within the U.S. government and the grant surveys previously. So that became quite an art. Again, that was a master. And Mr. Lovell was a master at that, too. Now, Mr. Lovell was a little older than my father. So my father learned from Mr. Lovell. There was a Mr. Landry in Plaquemine Parish, and ended up his son became a priest in this area that I ended up by knowing. And there were other few surveyors along the way. But again, my father had developed a clientele with primarily Louisiana Land Exploration Company, which owned 600,000 acres of wetlands in Terrebonne, Lafourche, over into Plaquemine and Jefferson Parishes. And he did most of the survey work on their properties. He also had a client by the name of Continental Land and Fur Company, which we have today. They own 125,000 acres of wetlands in Terrebonne Parish, one tract of land. Louisiana Land's property is kind of spread out, although they own 600,000 acres plus. It's spread out all the way from the Mississippi to the Atchafalaya River.
Well, let me clarify something. Years ago, you and I were talking, and you once told me that the water bottom in Louisiana went to the Winterlose Oil Company. They were subleased to W.T. Burton, who subleased to LL&E, who subleased to Texaco. And that was the chain of the water bottoms. And of course, LL&E went to Burlington, and now I guess it's part of ConocoPhillips. Okay. So we have this long linear chain of at least the water bottoms. Other than a conversation with T. Baker Smith, I have never seen that written, although I do believe you are exactly correct. Because if you try to find anything about the Winterlose Oil Company, that wall is easier to walk through.
That's interesting that you would say that, because what I know about it is, first off, let's go back. There were French and Spanish grants, and they were primarily on lands along the rivers and the bayous, and they were the valuable in those days. We're talking before 1800. Those were before the Louisiana Purchase. The valuable lands, of course, were the lands were above the river,
right,
tell you the truth. Not the Gulf, the river in those days. And so those lands were transferred from the kings of Spain and France to their different courts and ended up with huge grants of land. So, and there were surveys of those grants, and there are records of those grants. I mean, French and Spanish records in the records of the state of Louisiana, primarily, okay? Then the U.S. government surveyors came in and surveyed the vacant lands, let's say, which were primarily the marshes and the swamps that had very little surface value, all right? After the surveys, the United States, as far as I know, the United States government, deeded those lands, and that's not the right word, to the state of Louisiana, okay, because the federal government wasn't going to own the land. The states ended up owning the land, okay, that had not already been transferred. Then the state of Louisiana looked around, and in those days, and that gets back to our coastal erosion problem, that the greatest problem in Louisiana, this say before even coming into the Louisiana Purchase, was the Mississippi River, because every spring it would flood. So the landowners along the river began to build the levees for their survival. Okay? That became a state problem as the state began to grow and the value of the land increased. The landowners petitioned the state to get interested in building levees along the river. The state legislature, as far as I know, created different levee districts. Now, this is not only in Louisiana, by the way. If you go up and down Mississippi River, basically from St. Louis south and even north, there are all kind of levee districts that were created so that there was a vehicle for the government to tax the land to build the levee along the river. That was the levee district, the first. In our area, we're in what we call the Atchafalaya Levee District. And as far as I know, the Constitution and laws that created the levee districts in Louisiana gave them the right to levy a 5-mil property tax against the property within that district without a vote of the people. And the purpose was to build levees on the Mississippi River. And if we didn't want the river to flood us, so we weren't even going to get the vote on that. God damn it, you had to pay 5 mils property tax, okay? Well, all this land is owned by the state of Louisiana. State of Louisiana gives the land to the levee district to go and use the value of the land to use to get money to build levees on the Mississippi River, okay? All tributaries. The levee district say, well, how in the hell we can't tax it, we own the land. We got a right to levy 5 mil property tax, but most of the land we own now, okay? So what are we gonna do? So they, a wise lawyer and a banker from New Orleans called Wisner and Dresser, okay? They put a deal together, go to the Atchafalaya Levee District in particular, and said, look, we'll buy all this land for you for 25 cents an acre, okay? Levee District said, that's wonderful. We're going to take you 25 cents an acre. We're going to put you on the tax rolls and own the land, and we're going to tax you 5 mil property tax. And that's how we're going to get the money to start building the levees. Wisden and Dresser get them a train ticket and go to the east, Toledo, Ohio, Chicago, Ohio, and they started peddling this land off. Like when I grew up, they were peddling Arizona. You remember you could buy a lot in Arizona for $500 or something? I'm sure Wisden Dresser went to the east and started peddling this land as reclaimed land. And there were all kind of companies formed. The New Netherland Company, the New Holland Company, Cloverly Farms was the same way. Many of the reclamation projects, two or three in Terrebonne Parish, well, the same way that somebody's going to buy this land cheap, we're going to build levees and we're going to build pump stations, we're going to reclaim the land, you get 6 inches of rainfall a year, you got a growing season from March to October, man, we're going to make millions growing crops, okay? The Temkin-Rolabent family in Toledo, Ohio, put up a bunch of money. They ended up basically controlling Louisiana Land and Exploration Company. Louisiana Land, all right, so all of this went on, say, from 1900, say, to about 1920, okay? So, and companies went broke, bankrupt. You know, we talk about you're too big to go bankrupt, man, they'd go bankrupt around here. Every damn cane season, people would go bankrupt, lose everything. So surely this marsh, the only thing that marsh was a bunch of not neutral even in those days, but mud rats and what have you, and they couldn't hardly make a living doing that, all right? So those companies were really on their ass, frankly. All those companies, I mean, Louisiana Land, I can remember, and again, I was born in 1935, I surely can remember my father telling me between 35 and 40, Louisiana Land didn't have enough income to pay the employees. They would give them script. My father did work for Louisiana Land, and they couldn't get paid. My father's, the Louisiana Land's lawyer was Mr. Robert Smilling in New Orleans. My daddy, my Mr. Robert Smilling tells my daddy one day, they're working on a case for Louisiana Land, says, Baker, you ought to go buy some stock in Louisiana Land Exploration Company. This is, say, between 35 and 40. My daddy comes back. He was the only son of my grandfather. He was the oldest child. My grandfather bought stock in automobile steam companies. He bought a Colorado coal mine. And my daddy says, I want to borrow $100 from you because I want to buy some stock in Louisiana Land, which was 50 cents a share. And my grandpa said, what are you going to do with the $100? I said, I'm going to buy Louisiana Land stock. My grandpa said, you got to be out of your mind. I ain't lending you $100. My daddy goes and scrapes up $100 and buys Louisiana Land stock for 50 cents a share. When he died in 1962, it was worth $18,000. Okay, Mr. Milling at the time bought 3,000 shares. Okay, I mean, that they were on their butt. There was a guy came along from Sweden. We called him Mr. Seashore. He had a Swedish name that I can't even pronounce, but it's in the record somewhere. He sold the Temkin family on the fact that there could be oil and gas on this property. So that's when Louisiana Land, before Louisiana Land was New Holland or somebody else, and that's when they formed Louisiana Land and Exploration Company. And Mr. Seashore began, he was a geophysicist, and he began to do preliminary oil and gas activities. He discovered that a lot of the potential resources were not on the land, but on the water. And that's when he went to the state of Louisiana and started talking about how can I buy leases on the water. Again, the navigable waters of the state of Louisiana, the state of Louisiana owns the fee title to the water bottoms. And Louisiana Land, although they own 600,000 acres of land, and they did, and they, well, it's not 600,000 anymore, but they did, but adjacent to them was another 600,000 acres of water bottoms that Mr. Seashore had a theory, had oil and gas production on. So he begins to petition. This becomes about 35 to 40. He begins to petition the state of Louisiana to lease him the water bottoms. And the way you did that, you went to somebody that knew Huey Long, and you leased the water bottoms from a company that would lease the water bottoms. And that's how, frankly, the Win or Lose All Company, which was made up of people like W.T. Burton, James A. Noe, Alan Ellender, Harvey Pelche, Simon Weiss, they ended up with the state lease, and then they began to sublease it to people that ultimately, Louisiana Land ended up with the state leases. Louisiana Land drilled 6 dry holes on the state leases and their property, and they were bankrupt. Okay, in comes a little crappy company from Shreveport, Louisiana called The Texas Company, and they could borrow $100 million to go drill the exploration wells, and that made Texaco, and that made Louisiana Land, and that made the state of Louisiana, in my humble opinion.
And when Texaco, the Texas Company, right, came in, that was in the 30s. Actually, they were involved a little earlier than that.
Yep.
When they came in, they went into Lake Barre, and would you recall the number of wells they drilled before they found their first play?
I don't know about, I know that Louisiana Land, I think, drilled 6 dry holes.
Right.
Okay, I think Texaco was much more successful, the Texas company. Now, a guy you ought to talk to is Bill Hulls. Bill Hulls is an old older than me, and Bill Hulls was the Secretary of Natural Resources doing one of the Edwards administrations. And Bill Hulls is he's not from Louisiana, but he's been here forever. And he's been in the oil and gas business forever. And he knows a great deal about this. I tell you, another guy knows a great deal about this is Tozan. Tozan knows a great deal about it. Because Tozan at one time worked for Harvey Pelletier Jr. Okay? So Tozan knows a great deal about this. And of course, they are tremendous court. I mean, Louisiana Land has sued Texaco so many times. I mean, they got more court records than you could believe.
Well,
but that has made Texaco really, truly made Louisiana, well, this part of Louisiana in particular, but all across the state. I mean, those leases covered maybe not a lot in the Lake Charles Cameron area, but surely from Vermilion Bay east all the way to Mississippi.
And wasn't this building at one time?
Oh, yes. This building was built in 19... This building, let's see, I finished school in 58. This building was built about 1950. It just so happens that Texaco, my father had been working on and off at Texaco since they were here, 1935. By 1950, right after the Second World War, Texaco decided they wanted to really expand and build operations, had to build operations in Louisiana. And they built, and they had what they call the New Iberia District, the Houma District, the Harvey District, and the division office was in New Orleans. And they solicited my father to acquire the property for this installation because they didn't want the price to go out of sight. So my father and his lawyer at the time, a guy named Claude Ellender, who was Allen's brother, bought this property in behalf of Texaco, turned it to Texaco. Texaco built this building between 1945 and 1950. They expanded on the facility, expanded on this building, they built the building next door, and their slip was already here. They had operated for 50 years out of this building, and they at one time ran at least 50 drilling rigs. I mean, they had a budget right here, probably of about $250 million a year. And there was, Texaco probably had 5,000 engineers that went through this particular building, and just so happens, when Texaco left, they gave it to the YMCA. The YMCA mortgaged to the bank, lost it, and I bought the building from the banks. Kind of ironical how that all transpired. But they were, of course, huge. Texaco was huge employers. And I tell you, again, from the time I can remember, oil was $3 a barrel until at least I got out of college. And when I got out of college, again, you'd bring an oil or gas well in, and you got an allowable. The first thing you do is go bust the state's butt to get you an allowable to produce the well. And if the well can produce 150 barrels of oil, the state might allow you to produce 50. Okay? Or if it produced 10 million cubic feet of gas, the state might allow you to produce 2 million a day. I mean, that was unbelievable. I mean, that was, in the 1950s and 1960s. That was going on. All of a sudden, the need for oil and gas kept continuing to grow. So all of a sudden, nobody worried about chokes. Nobody worried about how much oil or gas you could produce. They produced everything. They blow the damn wells. Many wells, many sands were probably damaged by the fact that they tried to overproduce them too early. So that's been an evolution. I got a piece of property one of my grandfathers bought in 1903. They drilled a well, Chevron, the California company, drilled a well in 1950 on the property. The well is 10,050 feet deep. There's a unit of 60 acres producing this well. It's produced since 1950. Now, it ain't Chevron anymore. It ain't California company. It ain't the win or lose. It ain't Great Southern. It's somebody else now that ended up buying the well from me and recompleted the damn well and still producing. I mean, I cannot believe this well and the money it generates for me and my family. It's unbelievable. But that's the history, again. That's the history of Louisiana. And again, them people in Baton Rouge, that's, again, I used to love to go to the legislature. I used to love to go to Congress. I used to love to be around those bureaucrats and around those politicians. I mean, those people don't have a clue in Baton Rouge that the reason we have a deficit today is the price of all the gas. We can talk about income taxes. We can talk about sales taxes. We can talk about smaller government. We can talk about bigger government. We can talk about education. But Louisiana's budget depends on the price of oil and gas.
Exactly. Now, when you were growing up, did your family have a close working relationship with the clerk of court?
Oh, yeah. Again, my father started out in the clerk of court's office, like I tell you, with a process to do what he considered to be abstract survey of an area. Again, if somebody says, I want you to survey this 50 acres or this 100 acres on the bayou, there's 2 or 3 acres off in front by depth of survey, then my father to do that would have to reconstruct the titles in that area, basically going back to the grants, the U.S. government surveys, and then the titles. Much of the property was sold and occupied without the benefit of a survey, because again, then possession became 9/10 of the law. Believe that, okay? But you had to at least try to fit the title, fit the puzzle together. In doing that, you spent many hours in the conveyance records of the parish. So not only did you have to learn the conveyance records, the U.S. government title surveys, but how you put that all together in a jigsaw, okay? That's where the surveying background came in. And the first clerk of court that my father, I think, worked with was a Mr. Frank Worslow. Mr. Frank Worslow Sr. was, I think, the place, and I think that's who Randolph Bazette went to work for as a clerk of court. And then Mr. Bazette became the clerk of court for eternity. And then Mr. Bobby Boudreau became the clerk of court after Mr. Bazette. And we have been very, very blessed in Terrebonne. I mean, we have a very confusing geographic area here. I think we have a very confusing culture, even more confusing than Bayou Teche, than Bayou Lafourche, because Terrebonne has 5 bayous. Bayou Teche is 1 bayou, east-west. Bayou Lafourche is 1 bayou, north-south. We are DeLarge, Grand Cayou, Little Cayou, Terrebonne, and Pointe aux Chiens. And everybody comes to Houma, all right? And then you go north to Shriver and Gibson and whatever. Everybody comes to Houma. The bayous 200 years ago were the highways. The bayous were the area where the high land developed adjacent to it, okay? And because we were regional, everybody came to Houma, whereas you had a strip parish in Lafourche north-south, and you had people all the way from Leeville, Golden Meadows, all the way to Labadeville practically, and the resources were stretched. And then in Teche, you had the opposite from east to west, and they were stretched from Amelia all the way to Jeanneret. Whereas in Terrebonne, the assets were most centrally located in and around the city of Houma. Terrebonne Parish, again, has about 1,300,000 acres of surface. Now, when I say surface area, you got to remember, I'm talking about open water, bays, saltwater marsh, freshwater marsh, swamps.
But within the boundaries.
And about 300,000 acres of land above the 5-foot contour. So we have 1,300,000 acres of land, okay?
But only 300,000
above the 5-foot contour, okay? So we truly, like everybody said, where you from? I'm from south of New Orleans. Well, you mean you're from south of New Orleans? So I live in the Mississippi Delta. You go to Vicksburg, Mississippi, they tell you the Mississippi Delta starts in Vicksburg and stops at the Peabody Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee. I raised my hand and said, hey, Oz, I'm from 300 miles south of here, goddammit. I live in the Mississippi Delta. I live in the New Delta, assholes. So, I mean, that is a problem for us because nobody knows we're here, man. Hell, 90% of people in America think the Mississippi River stops in New Orleans. When I tell them the Mississippi River goes 125 miles south of New Orleans, they look at me like I'm nuts. I said, man, you think you've seen some resources in Mississippi Valley? Go to New Orleans, get in an airplane or a helicopter and fly to the mouth of the Mississippi River. You know, you ain't seen nothing, man. You know, they take me up the river on the Mississippi River Commission, and they show me 300 acres of wetlands, you know, somewhere in Missouri or Illinois somewhere. I said, man, I'm going to take you to Lafourche or Terrebonne Valley. I'll stop the automobile, and you cannot see the end of the wetlands, okay? They go over the horizon, man.
Well,
You'll appreciate this. I had a Japanese colleague that came to Louisiana. And I went out the road that goes between Grand Cayon and Little Cayon, and I stopped right there. Great and he's looking, and I said, get up on top of the car. Yeah. Now, remember, this fellow's from Japan.
Yeah.
What? I said, get up on top of the car. Oh, I'll hurt the car. I said, no, get up on top of the car. So he gets on the roof, and he looks, 360, and I said, what do you see? And he said, it's so big. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, when you were...
You go below Golden Meadows, stop on Oceana 1. You know, before you get to Leeville, you get on top of the car. I guarantee you cannot see the end of wetlands.
No. No.
You know?
Now, one of the things that I'm real curious about is you had one of your relatives involved in the timber industry. Mm-hmm. And the timber industry became important because during the Swampland Act, they bought a lot of timber. And it wasn't locals necessarily. It's the Rathburns, it's the Bowies, the Wilberts, the Schwings, the Kyles. You know the players. But when you look at Terrebonne, I don't know where the mills were in Terrebonne. I don't know where the sawmills were, other than in Gibson and Donner, maybe at Chacahoula, but you look at the canal patterns, and the canals give you a clue that they were harvesting cypress.
Yep.
Could you just kind of...
Well, I know where one... My grandfather had a sawmill where the American Legion home is, in Houma. I can show you the foundation for the boiler at the sawmill. You remember, you were running everything with steam or something because you didn't have electricity. So I know that there was the sawmill where the American Legion home was, and I can again show you the foundation for the boiler. There was a sawmill where the Sunbury operation was up on Main Street. I can show you where that was. Of course, the Donner Chacahoula area had a huge sawmill. There were 1,000 men employed at that place. And there's a lot of books written about Donner Chacahoula. Down the bayous, I don't know of any particular area where there was a sawmill. I know, again, the two that I know of in the Houma area were there. I mean, I can remember seeing the remnants of both of them. You ride around and you see foundations. There's a foundation on Rebecca Plantation that I thought was a sugar mill. The people that owned Rebecca now tell me it was not a sugar mill, but I don't think it was a sawmill. It was some other kind of industry that was there. So I can't, now that you mention it, I can think about two places that there were sawmills. But there are people around. The Bugare family owned Dulac Cypress Company. They still own land. They're still around. The Bugare family is still around. Who was it? Somebody else I was thinking about that. Oh, Begay. There was a guy named Begay that actually worked for one of my grandfathers that was in the lumber business for years. And some of his heirs might be around that could tell you where there might be sawmills specifically in the Houma Terrebonne area.
Well, when you mentioned...
But the sawmills, you see, I used the example of the cypress business.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to the oil and gas business. Obviously, the cypress was the first resource that somebody discovered, particularly in the wetlands, in the swamps. And they literally destroyed them. I mean, they clear-cut the cypress. And eventually, the cypress business went away because there was no more cypress. And that's the kind of deal we're dealing with in oil and gas. I mean, you know, as wonderful oil and gas has been to us since the 30s in Terrebonne Parish and Louisiana, it's a depleting resource, and that's very, in my opinion, in my lifetime, that's always been very scary. Although Terrebonne Parish, and we existed, my ancestors existed here before oil and gas, but there weren't 120,000 people living in Terrebonne Parish. Again, like I tell you, I believe when my father got out of school in 1913, there was probably about 5,000 people living in Terrebonne, and agriculture and seafood was the only industry. That was it.
But it's interesting to Carl and I that if you have 1,000 people working in the swamps, that's one-fifth of what may be the population at that time. To use a word that I overwork, and this is my editor, that's not trivial. That is an enormous number of new residents, new settlers, new surnames, new attitudes.
And that went on from about 1860, well, just after the Civil War, 1865, to about 1920.
Okay, well, I'd like to follow up on that note, because the same thread, when the Texas Oil Company comes in and brings in a whole new batch of people, that's something nobody ever talks about. But could you tell, there's something you would have witnessed as a child here.
Definitely.
What was the social and cultural impact of all these people coming in from
Very interesting question and very interesting observation. As a native of the area, and my wife and I both natives of the area, we always thought that it was difficult for foreigners to come in to Terrebonne. But we made many, many friends our age, many friends. Again, because of the business we were in and we were servicing those companies, those employers, we have made many friends. And many friends tell us that Terrebonne was a great place to move to. Now, we were always a blue-collar town. We had very few, although we did have some petroleum engineers and some geologists, but we had, compared to Lafayette, we had very few. Again, the oil center in Lafayette did marvelous things for Lafayette, in my opinion. Hello. These people, South Louisiana has just got a culture that's absolutely unbelievable. I've lived here all my life, and I'll go down to Montague today with you guys, or go to Cocodrie today with you guys, or to go to Chester Laperouse's place on Little Kai today with you guys, and I'm the kid from Homa, okay? Them people don't think I'm a native, okay? I mean, I ain't a native as far as they're concerned. I'm from Homa. I'm the kid from Homa named Smith. That's a little bird, you know? And I never did learn how to talk French, which was pretty stupid. Because if you could go down there and talk French to somebody, you're okay. But the point is that we have tremendous ingenuity. We have tremendous ability to survive. That is the only way you can live in Terrebonne Parish. Man, when you think about people, just think about my ancestors that came to Terrebonne in the 1830s and 1840s. You came to New Orleans from France, okay? Say from Bordeaux or from Alsace-Lorraine or somewhere. You came to New Orleans in a boat. You got off the boat. You went up the Mississippi River on a steamboat to Donaldsonville. You came down the damn Bayou Lafourche in a steamboat and to Thibodaux. Then you came down Bayou Terrebonne either in a steamboat or in a damn buggy to Houma, Louisiana. Now, who would do that, man? There had to be somebody chasing you, you know? You had to be a draft dodger or a convict or something and said, I'm going somewhere where no bastard's going to ever find me. Because everybody else went up the river, to go east of where you're from, of course, is Acadiana, and that was a little earlier. And without a doubt, Jimmy Hayes, used to make a speech, without a doubt, them people came there so nobody'd ever find them. Don't tell me about government, man. We don't want government. We've been run out of every damn country we ever went to.
That's exactly right.
You know, so again, that's why we got a slight problem with all the government. That's again why I'm confused and depressed, okay? But, so we have a tremendous ingenuity here. I mean, we really do. I mean, and what we've been through, frankly, what I've been through in my lifetime, but particularly what I've been through since Hurricane Ivan, okay, since Ivan, which I lose track of, that was in 04, I believe, 04, 05, and now 08, what we've been through, in my lifetime, in my recent lifetime, and I've been through all the damn storms, I have never evacuated Terrebonne Parish for hurricane until Gustav. And I don't think I will ever evacuate Terrebonne Parish again. Because Gustav, the models, the wonderful computer models, with Big Mike and super-duper computers, were wrong for Gustav. They were wrong positive, but they were wrong. And they were wrong for Ike. They were wrong, Ike negative, okay? So I don't believe them. I didn't believe them in the first place, and I really don't believe them now, because I missed the computer age, okay? They didn't teach that at LSU. So I say a hurricane is such an unusual weather event, and where you are is such an important part of the geography equation that you can't put it in a computer. And depending upon where the storm is, the intensity of the storm, the location of the storm,
the aftermath of the storm and what's happening to you physically and what's happening to us physically, we can't, no way you can put that in a computer. We had a plus five for Rita. We had a plus five right down the road. We had a plus seven for Ike. Okay? That's what's happening in this place. So this is a plus 11. So one of these days, they're going to have a plus 11 here or more. Ain't no doubt in my mind. But I've come to the conclusion that I got generators everywhere. I built an office in Thibodaux, 14 feet above sea level, 15 miles north of here. I have a facility in Lafayette with a redundant computer system, and I have a facility in Houston with a redundant computer system. I have a two-story guest house I built that I think is hurricane-proof, and it's the second story is 20 feet above sea level. And I don't think I'm leaving. The reason I ain't leaving is, first off, that getting back is ridiculous, okay? Secondly, I look around and see the authorities. I ain't leaving my property in their name, in their hands. I got very little confidence in them people. I don't care what they say. I don't like their models, and I don't like the way they run their business. And by the way, you know, I was here before FEMA, okay? And I'll be here after FEMA. You know what Mr. Tozant told me in 1980, he got elected to Congress. And he got elected on a ticket to eliminate the Department of Energy that had just been created. So he goes to Washington, D.C. in 1980. And he goes to some social function in 1980. He bumps into a guy, told him to introduce himself. The guy introduced himself, so I went to the Department of Energy. Told him, I said, I don't know if you want to shake my hand. So I just got elected to Congress to eliminate the Department of Energy. And the guy said, well, Mr. Congressman, I wouldn't worry about that. He said, I'm on the B team. And told them, I said, what is the B team? He said, I'll be here when you come, and I'll be here when you're gone. So I'm with the B team with FEMA. Because them SOBs.
We were talking about the lumber company, and I have read all of the early transcripts of the, well, within the clerk of court's records for the parish government. And one of the things Terrebonne did that, I don't know of any other parish. You had some siltation problems, not from flooding of the river, but from the pull boat logging in the swamps, putting sediments, and those sediments were filling your bio. So you bought the dredge boat, the Eclipse. And I know the Eclipse. Can you give me some, you know, that's a massive undertaking for a parish and its public works to get in the dredge business.
We in Terrebonne, again, it goes back, there was a number of drainage districts formed. There was another number of, not levee districts, primarily drainage districts. And there were a number of canals dug, not only for logging purposes, but primarily for drainage purposes. There was one, what they call the Prairie Land District, drainage district, which was between the Coteau Ridge, Bayou Blue Ridge, and Homer. Just so happened, C.P. Smith ended up by being the president of that drainage district, and he dug a canal from Bayou Terrebonne to Bayou Coteau to Bayou Blue for drainage purposes. That's where U.S. 90 ended up by being built, right along the spoils from that canal. So drainage, again, because of the ridges, as I described to you, was very important. And also, in the 1926 storm, we get back to hurricanes. Mm-hmm. We had a great storm in 1856 that affected Terrebonne. There was a 1909 storm that affected Terrebonne, which my father, grandfather, and a great uncle drowned in. But my father and grandfather survived the storm. And then there was a 1926 storm that was affected Terrebonne. And then, in later years, as far as I'm concerned, Betsy was a major storm. And we've had a few others, and that's another book that I would like somebody to write one day about the storms that drastically affected Terrebonne Parish. Interesting, Homer has never flooded from a hurricane because I consider our buffer was the wetlands, which are gone. Again, I think we've lost over 400,000 acres of land between here and the Gulf of Mexico in Terrebonne Parish within my lifetime, and that was our protection, and that's gone. But again,
in 1926, there was a hurricane, and my father told me about the story that the hurricane created what we call Wanda Lake, which was between Bayou Terrebonne and Bayou Pointe-aux-Chenes. And the storm with the tornadoes, et cetera, picked up the marsh and put it in the middle of Bayou Terrebonne. And they had to dredge Bayou Terrebonne out for navigation and drainage purposes. So drainage was always a big deal. So you say, okay, there were problems with the pull boat runs, there were problems with moving the timber around in the 20, between, again, 18, let's say 1870 and 1920. Drainage was always important. We had a drainage, a gravity drainage tax in this parish. As far as I know, it was put into place in 1930s, and probably even before that, to tell you the truth. But what I know about is about 1930, there was a millage, a parish-wide millage for drainage, we'd call it gravity drainage improvements. Most of our drainage, until my lifetime, until my professional lifetime, was gravity drainage. We never had a drainage problem of influx of water. We always had a gravity drainage problem. Again, we get 60 inches of rainfall on average a year. One 1992, we got 100 inches of rain. We've gotten some months 20 inches of rain in a month, okay? So drainage is always a big deal. Of course, our drainage system also was drastically affected by the levying of the Mississippi and the Chappelier River. We are between the basin of the Mississippi and the Chappelier and the Bayou Lafourche basin to the Gulf of Mexico. That's how Morganza to the Gulf got named, by the way, because we're in the basin all the way from Morganza, Louisiana, the Mississippi River to Bayou Lafourche to the Gulf of Mexico and the east guide levee of the Chappelier River. This is a basin, okay? Love when the court talks about the basin. I said, well, first of all, when you talk about the basin that I live in starts in Minnesota, and it comes all the way to the Gulf of Mexico. Now, I got a little basin where I live, but if you want to talk about the basin, it's the big basin, and I'm part of the big basin. So don't do something in Minnesota and don't think about what the shit you're doing to me in Louisiana. Let me tell you, they don't have a clue, okay? I've been preaching that for 50 years. And it's like, I mean, I just soon been talking to the chair. One reason is because they change everybody every 3 years. Which is also a ridiculous process. Oh, where was I? Again, drainage was, I'm sure if you go back in the records of the parish, drainage for us was probably as important as the Mississippi River. Again, interesting, in 1997, we had a flood of the Mississippi River. Before last year, that was the last time Bonnie Carey was open. Interesting, reading the Homer Courier somewhere within the last 2 or 3 years, and I may have the article, I know I have the article somewhere. We had a flood in 1897, and there was an article in the Homer Courier, and the big problem with the 1897 flood was that the Bayou Lafourche was going to flood. And that there was going to be a crevasse in Bayou Lafourche in St. Charles, and it was going to flood all of Terrebonne from the east, okay, coming from Bayou Lafourche. And that was a big, big concern. After the 1897 flood is the time they started talking about damming Bayou Lafourche.
Right.
And again, my grandparents in the interim started building houses in Homer. The lots 11 feet above sea level. They built about 1900. They built their houses 6 feet off the ground. Not because they liked to go up steps, but because they thought their houses would flood from the Mississippi River. Now, I may see the damn houses flood from the Gulf of Mexico. I was showing somebody the other day below Bird. He owns a piece of property. House flooded for Ike. Never flooded before. Lives on a little ridge down there. So he's building up his mound, pod. In Holland, they build pods. We build mounds now, okay? He's building up to +8. That's the FEMA elevate. I said, okay, you got 100-year flood protect. Yeah, 100-year. I said, if you want to build your house 10 feet up above that, you'll have 500 years. And that's what people used to do, okay? They don't go to get certified levees and all this other BS. That's what they did. That's what they did in New Orleans. That's what they did across South Louisiana. That's what they did in Terrebonne Parish. I can remember going down to Bayou in Bayou Lafourche, and everything was raised. Every ballroom they had was raised. I can remember the stories about you go up and you had a guy, a badass, in Golden Meadows one time, and somebody had to go arrest him. My neighbor was Johnny Folks. Johnny Folks was the game warden in Terrebonne Lafourche. Nobody would go up and get this guy. Johnny Folks come down and said, what's the matter? He said, well, I got this guy up there, want to kill everybody. Nobody wants to go get him. I'll go get him. He goes up the steps. He tells this guy, Ponder, you under arrest, pulls his gun out, handcuffs him. They walk to the steps. The guy trips him going down the steps. Boop, 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 boop. 10 feet down. When they got to the ground, the guy was dead. But that's the way it was, Ponder. You know, he was the game warden. Everybody else lived in a houseboat. You go down to Bahia. I can remember people in Terrebonne Parish. You go down to Dulac. You go down. First off, you go to Dulac. They had a big barroom at Dulac. Bahia Dulac, built up high. Everybody built everything up high. And some fool came along in 1945, built some on a slab. I mean, that's the guy that ought to go to jail. You know, they want to put the Corps in jail. They want to put these people in jail. Guy that built the first house on the first slab in South Louisiana ought to be the one to go to jail, whoever that was.
So houseboats were the rule.
Well, yeah. And even today, I go down to Bahia. I've been down this parish after a storm so many times. You know, I stay in Terrebonne for a storm because I felt protected. Truly did. Didn't feel like I was in peril. And as an engineer, I wanted to see the effect of the storm. So after the storm, soon as the wind stops blowing, okay, I'm down to Bias. I'm in an airboat. I'm in a helicopter. I'm in something. You go down to Bias and see the people that do like, partner, they're in their boat, turn to the south, the way people lived. And I mean, I'm talking about 30-year-old guys, partner, and they know what the hell to do down there. I'm going to the cardiac doctor the other day. In home, I've been going to cardiac doctor for 26 years because my partner died one time in the real estate business at my age, so I've been going to the doctor. I mean, then they got a beautiful little woman comes in to give me some kind of treatment or something, and she's young. She looks like she's 40 years old or older. And I said, how you doing? And I'm looking out the cardiac doctor's office at home, it's right on the edge of the intercoastal. And I'm looking at the intercoastal. I said, look at that. That's muddy water. That's from the Chapel Eye. See, this was about a month ago. I said, the river's getting high and the water's coming in. By the way, the river's cresting today, by the way. But anyhow, she says, well, that's something that's good, that muddy water coming. She said, yeah. And I don't know. I said, where you live? She said, I live at the end of Bonner Lodge. I said, what do you mean you live at the end of Bonner Lodge? Where you live at the end of Bonner Lodge? She said, you know Stanley Liner? I said, yeah, I know him well. He said, that's where I live. I said, you live on the 16th section? Yeah, that's where I live. I said, why in the world? Now, this obviously a very well-educated lady. I mean, she's been working at the cardiac. I mean, she's a nurse, okay? And she says, I said, well, why you live down there? I said, your house flooded for Rita? Yeah. Your house flooded for Ike? She said, yeah, but we had built everything up, and what flooded, we figured we were going to flood anyhow. I said, okay. I said, why the hell you lived on it? She said, well, I married this so-and-so Leret. He used to work for you, Cliff. I said, oh, yeah? Yeah, he worked in a survey crew. I said, well, why you lived on it? She said, he's a fisherman. She makes a good living, a fisherman. And we live here, and right across the road is the boat. And that's where he goes, gets in his boat every morning, goes crabbing or trawling, and he makes a good living. And, you know, she said, if he didn't do that shit, we wouldn't live there, goddammit. I mean, I would live somewhere else, but that's what he does. That's where we were born, what the hell, you know? But that's getting confused again. I get confused. Now, here's nice people. Obviously, this lady's got a pretty good formal education. Her husband has got him a way to make a good living, and he ain't going to Napoleonville, or he ain't going. I mean, this is where he is. That's the dilemma, okay? And, you know, this poor guy living in Interby Lodge, I take him in Interby Lodge right now, and the damn water's probably over the road right now.
But you put your finger right on it. It is a dilemma.
Yeah, it is. It's just like I go the other day where I was riding around with the parish president. But I'm riding around with the parish president. We're at the Isle of Jean Charles. You know, and the first time I went to Isle of Jean Charles, I walked to Isle of Jean Charles. Okay, and they were lucky that you could walk there. Before, you used to have to paddle a pirogue through Lake Barre to get there, all right? So, I mean, when I walked to Isle of Jean Charles in 1952, them people looked at me like I was from the moon, and I looked at them like they were from the moon, okay? So I've been going to Isle-Jean-Charles forever. So I'm driving down to Isle-Jean-Charles with the parish president. He said, man, we got to rebuild the road. He said, why would we rebuild this road? I said, I agree with you. This is ridiculous. God, it costs $4-5 million. The damn everything there ain't worth $20,000. I said, he said, well, what would you do? I said, that's why I ain't the parish president, Hoss. I said, I ain't going to make that decision. I think I know what I would do, but I mean, by now I got other decisions to make. You ran for parish president, not me. But then I can show you all over Terrebonne Parish examples of that. I can show you public money being spent where anybody with their right mind wouldn't do it. I can show you coastal restoration projects in Terrebonne Parish where money has been spent to protect the coastal area that ain't never functioned, that nobody ever goes and operates it. Okay, they have paid me, my firm, thousands, probably millions of dollars to design projects that get built that nobody operates. And we read about the paper. We got the biggest problem. We do have the biggest problem. But the biggest problem is we ain't got a commitment. You know, Mary Landrieu want to go to Holland. I've been to Holland, okay? The biggest problem is them people are committed to protecting their ass from the North Sea. We ain't committed. And I'll tell anybody, we got a magnificent library in this parish that I voted for, okay? We need a library in this parish like we need a hole in the head if it's got 10 feet of salt water in it. And we still don't understand that. We do not understand that. My mother was on the founding library board in Terrebonne Parish. How could I be opposed to a library tax? But we got a library tax that generates probably $4-5 million a year. And man, and we got a $15 million library, and we're building branches now all over the goddamn place that are going to be underwater. And nobody, you know, I mean, the stupid newspaper don't write about that. You know, I mean, it's confusing. I'm very confused.
Well, going back, because Carl and I are real interested in your notion about people building. They raised their house. They did it not because FEMA told them, but this is what I have to do to protect myself.
Yep.
I've seen only one photograph at Seabreeze. And yet, Seabreeze, I know, was an important recreational facility for Homer.
Mm-hmm.
There apparently was in a very large...
That's the boat races at Lake Barry.
And what is this in the background? All of these houses. Is that houseboats?
Probably so, yeah.
All right.
Let's see if I can find it. This is the boat my father built in 1926. They were building this boat in 1926 at Madison Canal. Mm-hmm. And the storm was coming, okay? Building this thing out of virgin cypress, all right? The storm was coming. The cabin wasn't built. The engine wasn't in it. So they sunk the boat and came back after the storm and bumped out and finished building it. Okay, this is the boat I used to go to the coast in every damn summer. This is my daddy fishing for tarpon at Wine Island Pass, and with rod and reels. Probably the first rod and reels. That was the tarpon. See right there, standing in the damn pass. See, they're standing in the pass.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see if I can find it. Okay, again, this is the tarpon. This happens to be my father right here. This is at the same place. See, they used to sleep on top of the boat with mosquito nets. This is my father. Can you believe that?
Wine Island Pass.
We go trawl for tarpon and they were just fishing the damn things. Still fishing them. Okay.
That one's enormous.
Yeah. This is a, look at the boat. Look at the boat. Be like old man in the sea. I think this is at Seabreeze, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now this is the first rotten reels you see. I think this is at Seabreeze. I think this is at Seabreeze. Wait a minute.
Wow.
This is at Seabreeze, but this is when I was on the boat, and this is with the old shrimp drying platform at Seabreeze. This is the boat. This is Bayou Terrebonne. Barra Street. Right here is Barra Street. The DuPont store was here. This was Estes Seafood Market. And just before my time, but I know where it is. This is the bridge. This was the bridge I think my grandfather built at Barrett Street. And this was the boat they used to run down the bay, just take people down the bay. Hmm. Cruising down the bay. Okay, here you go. Here's the camp at Seabreeze. This was the, as far as I know, this was the camp in 1909 that my father, my grandfather, and my great uncle went to in September. To, in